I'll reconvene the hearing. Mr. Dean.
Thank you, sir. I've just got a brief summary of my evidence, which I'll read out for the panel.
Please.
My name is Sean Dent. I'm a resource management planning consultant for Southern Planning Group, and I'm here today presenting expert planning evidence on behalf of Australia Tourism Limited and Skyline Enterprises Limited. My primary evidence has already been pre-circulated in accordance with the directions of the hearings chairman. The primary matters which have been addressed in my pre-circulated evidence relate to the simplification and streamlining of the management of informal airports and the provisions relating to commercial recreation activities. With respect to the proposed district plan provisions for informal airports, I agree with the council's approach to recognise and stipulate for its objectives and policies that the rural zone is the appropriate zone for this activity. Quite simply, there is no other proposed zone in the district plan that more readily provides for the open space, low density residences and urban infrastructure that make aircraft operations desirable from a commercial tourism perspective, as well as being safe and with suitable separation distances to maintain rural amenity. The proposed provisions that enable limited scenarios and or numbers of permitted flights are a significant improvement on the status quo in which every single aircraft landing in the district requires resource consent. In my opinion, the status quo has not been effective and efficient, but either the aircraft operators or the council, we must process the required applications. I understand a number of submitters believe the proposed limitations on flights for private rural zone land to be an impediment to their current use. With respect, if these submitters can prove existing use rights, the proposed provisions have no effect on them. Alternatively, if no existing use rights apply, then provisions are again an improvement on the status quo. I have considered the recommendations in Section 42A report, and I agree with the change from a maximum weekly flight limit to a daily flight limit on private rural zone land, primarily due to the ease of monitoring and compliance. I have made recommended changes to the relevant objectives and policies for informal airports on pages 4 and 5 of my primary evidence, and to rule 21.2.25 on page 7 of my primary evidence. I support the Council Officer's proposed rule 21.5.26 as drafted on page 78 of the Section 42A report. I do note that while the previous submission I lodged on behalf of Total Tourism Limited supported a policy protecting informal airports from reverse sensitivity issues, I have omitted to outline such in my primary evidence. As such, I suggest now that an additional policy, number 21.2.11.3, be added to the proposed district plan that reads, protect existing informal airports from incompatible land use and development located within the rural zone. In my opinion, this proposed policy sends a clear directive that proposals for rural residential development in particular need to be cognizant of existing informal airports and the separation distances necessary to coexist in the rural zone. In regards to the proposed district plan provisions for commercial recreation activities, it is my opinion that there were no specific objectives in supporting policies for commercial recreation activities. The most relevant provisions were, in my opinion, found in Part 21.2.9 of the proposed district plan. These provisions refer to commercial, industrial, retail and forestry activities, but do not once refer specifically to commercial recreation activities. Accordingly, it is my opinion that the relevance of the proposed rules for commercial recreation activities contained within Table 5 are limited. Accordingly, I proposed a new objective and four supporting policies at pages 11 and 12 of my primary evidence. These provisions direct and inform proposed rules 21.4.16 and standard 21.5.21 that commercial recreation activity can be appropriate in the rural zone, but specific regard must be given to group sizes in order to control overcrowding and diminish amenity for other users, and acknowledgement of the special character of some of the rural areas, particularly with regard to peace and tranquility. Overall, subject to the amendments discussed herein and those in my primary brief of evidence, I consider that the provisions of the proposed district plan are an appropriate response to informal airports and commercial recreation activities in the Queenstown Lakes District. I'm happy to answer questions from the commissioners that are within my area of expertise.
Yes, just in paragraph 1.3, there you talked about the rural zone being the primary. Do you see that the rural living zones are pretty much inappropriate for informal airports? Is that what you're saying?
In terms of the rural living areas, it's my opinion that there may be areas in which it is appropriate for some limited informal airport activity. But in my opinion, I believe that the proposed discretionary activity status for informal airports in both rural lifestyle and rural residential zones is more appropriate, and given the more urbanised nature.
You were here when we were asking questions of some of the previous submitters who were concerned about private airfields and the situation they might face. And we have asked them and Mr. Barr to try and map where those are. Would that assist, do you think, in a planning sense, in identifying that there may be some airports with existing use rights?
It may go some way to identifying those strips, but in terms of identifying when they were lawfully established, if they were lawfully established, the onus for that, I believe, still has to lie with the landowner or the operator, whether it's private or commercial, who seeks to use those airstrips. And I expect that would be a very difficult task for some of those airstrips, but there are no historical records that have been kept.
Yes. Yes, it can be quite onerous to prove existing use rights, can't it?
Yes, in that regard, I did some work with the Naitahu Opotipu Holdings Limited, who own Greenstone Alpine and Redmond stations, I believe back in about 2008, and we applied for resource consent for a number of helicopter landing sites and fixed wing landing sites on those stations, and there was some argument as to whether there were existing use rights at some of those sites, but the difficulties in providing historical documentation that potentially would have to have been 20, 30, 40 years old to prove a lawful establishment on those sites just wasn't possible, and on our advice they went through and applied for resource consent.
The other question is too, noting your familiarity with this and knowing, as I do, that some of the early work on this issue was undertaken by you, do you consider there is some validity in the submitted suggestion that there be a separation between fixed-wing aircraft and formal airports and helicopter and formal airports?
I have considered that, and the primary reason I considered that was through the evidence of Dr. Stephen Childs, where he has indicated that in some instances fixed-wing airstrip may not be able to comply with the proposed noise limit, particularly in the direction of takeoff and landing. And I considered whether or not it would be worthwhile having a separate rule for those fixed-wing flights, given that issue. But in my opinion, given the very low number of fixed-wing airstrips in the district and the very low number of resource consents that I'm aware of that have been applied for those strips, I think the rules as they are drafted in combination with the proposed noise rules as well is an appropriate response.
I think the argument put forward, that was before you arrived, so you didn't hear it, was that because there are so few private airstrips, as you say, compared to potential helicopter and former airports, that was grounds to actually separate them out for the private ones and reduce the onus on those. What would your view be on that?
So separate them out and
have different sections of rules. And make it less onerous for the private participating in airstrips.
Was that primarily because they were fixed-wing aircraft or in terms of private nature? Because if it was a question between private and commercial operations, then why would the effect between private fixed-wing flight and commercial fixed-wing flight, or helicopters for that matter, have the same effect? And I don't know if that would warrant separation of the activities.
It was the combination of the two, both private and fixed-wing. So. was the argument they put to us.
I think if you put the private and commercial aside, potentially, yes, there could be merit in looking at isolating the informal airport rules for fixed-wing operations. In terms of how that might work and whether it become less onerous, I think the key issue is how it relates back to the proposed noise rules and potentially if you were wanting to make a permitted fixed-wing airstrip. At the moment, the proposed separation distances are 500 metres all around, whereas Stephen Charles has indicated that potentially out to 1 kilometre you could have issues combined with the noise limit. If you were going to separate out the fixed wing and formal airports, would you then have to increase the separation distance?
We'd have to have the separation distance in relation to the orientation of the strut.
Yes. So it could potentially become slightly more onerous in the way the rules are drafted at the moment. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I believe those proposed noise rules, whilst they are within the scope of this hearing, work in combination. Separated from the current rule that's drafted at the moment as well.
Okay. Now the other matter they raised were the, and I suspect they were talking about fixed wing airports, and again private, but out on the stations such as at the branches, Greenstone, those sort of locations. Mm-hmm. Would clearly they are more than 500 metres from boundaries, they're more than 500 metres from anything, most of them. In your view, in those isolated situations, do we need to be concerned about the number of flights on a private airstrip in those circumstances?
In that particular example, branch and station without any confirmation in front of me, I believe, is pastoral police. And the way the proposed rules are drafted at the moment is that there wouldn't be any limits on flights provided they were operating in accordance with a recreation permit issued by Land Information New Zealand. Now, if you were the pastoral lessee and you were using your primary means of flying out and out of the property, my understanding is you wouldn't need a recreation permit, so perhaps you said it would be worthwhile looking at an exemption to that rule to provide those, I would imagine, very limited situations.
Yeah, what about your friends coming to visit? I mean, I'm thinking too, there's a place like Minaret. It's the only way the friends can come to visit.
Yes, and perhaps wording could be included in the exemption for the occupiers and immediate friends and family.
So that something you've put your mind to at all? I'm just wondering if you have. It'd be helpful if you could.
No, I don't think I have, sir. Primarily, and Branches is a very good example of an isolated release station where the only means of access is air, whereas Minaret, for example, has boat access. Nicholas has boat access and vehicle access as well. And to my knowledge, probably be very few examples like that where aircraft is a primary means in and out of the station.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Dean. Going to your primary evidence in terms of objectives and policies, I'm not sure you've been before us before, but I tend to go on about the environmental outcomes sought and objectives and how they should be framed. In terms of paragraph 17, 21 to 11, that objective, what's the environmental outcome that's sought there, and how is that stated as a goal?
The intention is that informal airports are provided in the rural zone.
Isn't that a policy?
I can see your question now, sir. Subject to the management of the location scale and intensity is, I guess, intended to maintain rural amenity characteristics of the area.
So shouldn't it be to maintain the rural amenity characters of the area? Because at the moment, if it's worded, it says management of the location scale intensity. But it doesn't say what the purpose of that management is.
I accept that would be a more appropriate word in use.
Turning to paragraph 24-25, when you talk about concessions, and you do go over on the other side page to it, but in terms of 24, where you talk about that exemption for the Department of Conservation under section 4.3 of the RMA, where works are activities occur within consistent with the relevant conservation management strategy. Do we have a copy of that where, or can someone direct us to where in that, these types of things in terms of DOCS activities, that the conservation management strategy only applies to that, that it doesn't apply to things where they're granting concessions or whatever, or...
I'm
trying to understand whether it says where activities are consistent with the conservation management strategy or plan. I'm looking for evidence of the strategy or plan where it says that.
I can't off the top of my head today provide you with that reference.
That's all right. Paragraph 37, just in your suggested rewording there, just 21.5.25.3, I'm just checking and show that I have actually read it, a comma to go after rescues, would that be correct?
Yes, that would be correct.
And just in terms of the emergency landings, rescues, I get the intention of that, you think that covers most of those sort of unusual safety type or firefighting activities?
Yes,
I would. turning to paragraph 53. This is just in regard to 2 flights a day or 14 a week. I'm not sure you might have heard one of the submitters before you talk about a banking of the flights due to weather and that type of thing. Do you have a view on that, or did you consider that banking of flights during the work that you did earlier in terms of preparing the formal import provisions?
In terms of banking of the flights, and this is probably getting more into an area of acoustic expertise, but my understanding of both the NZS 6805 and 6807 standards is that they do provide for an element of averaging within those standards, but there is still a maximum noise limit that has to be complied with on any one day as well. Now, if a party or a commercial operator or a private individual were to land bank their flights and suddenly look to undertake more than one day, I suspect that there could still be significant non-compliance with the relevant noise rule as well. And further from a general amenity perspective, that would raise, in my view, a lot of uncertainty for rural residents and operators in the rural zone as well. In my experience, a lot of the annoyance with aircraft noise comes from an anxiety of not knowing how many flights are going to occur on a day. If, for example, you rely simply on an acoustic limit as opposed to knowing there's going to be 2 flights per day and that's it, that's all I have to put up with. But I think that is more appropriate.
I also asked this movement for you in your understanding of how the provisions worded is one land, one takeoff is one movement.
One movement would be a landing or a departure, and one flight is 2 movements. So one flight is an arrival and a departure.
So plane comes in, lands on the ground, drops people off, takes off again. Is that one or two?
That's 2 movements,
right?
One flight.
Right, in terms of the plan, the term eyes, the difference between movement and flight, the limit in the plan though is on
flights
rather than movements. So flights is the terminology to be consistent. Right, okay,
yes.
Yep. Thank you. To paragraph 72. And these are the new policies that you've referred to. When I'm linking it back, those come back to the objectives that you have on in paragraph 67, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct, sir.
Well, I'm just wondering about avoid, remedy, or mitigate in terms of the policies. There's two, and that terminology repeating what's in the Act, is that commensurate with what's actually in the objective and what it... Is it consistent to derive a policy where it's avoid, remedy, or mitigate, or should it be more directive?
I think in regard to... So that point, that could be to avoid.
would reduce or minimise? Would that be, in your view, does that have any place there, or is...
Are we talking about a specific policy, sir, or the two?
It's about the two with the... Or one or the other?
I think the second policy that uses that terminology, it would potentially be appropriate to use the word minimise.
And can I just be clear, you said before you could just have a void, was that for the first one that uses
yes,
that terminology?
Yes, sorry, sir, that was for the first one.
Turning to paragraph 131 about the indigenous vegetation.
I think that might be in tomorrow's hearing stream, isn't it?
So you're back again tomorrow?
Yes, I'll be back again tomorrow.
You're coming with Ms. McDonald tomorrow.
All right. Tomorrow afternoon.
Yes, that's correct.
So, we can have a chat then.
Okay.
That's the end. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dean. Just looking at paragraph 41 of your evidence, suddenly based on your experience, you consider 14 flights per week to be near the maximum threshold of amenity for some members of the community, especially despite the operation of informal airports. we've had quite a few submissions from private aviators who have painted a picture of quite a high level of harmony within the local flying community and their neighbours, and they've talked to us about people being really interested in watching planes coming and going and generally having positive perceptions of in particular small fixed wing aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
Are you starting from a basis of there being a negative attitude towards small aircraft noise?
Yes, I mean, I certainly appreciate and agree with what you're saying. I believe from a large proportion of the community there is a novelty factor involved in watching small aircraft operations, be it fixed wing or helicopter landings. But there is a particularly vocal faction of the community that has, I would say, almost a zero tolerance for aircraft noise as well. So in setting any noise limits or limits on the numbers of daily flights or weekly flights, it really is a balancing act between those two parts of the community. And as an example, one particularly vocal group is the Harvest Point Protection Society. They've been involved in a number of aircraft noise related environment court proceedings from about 2009 until quite recently with Skyline Helipad in particular.
Okay. So in terms of, we've heard that a lot of the history or the heritage of fixed wing aircraft aviation in the district has come from historical top dressing informal airports. In your experience, do you have a view on the number of flights that a local rural neighbour might have to put up with in the normal running of an airstrip for that purpose?
For solely agricultural purposes? No, I couldn't give you any specific information on that. My understanding of it is the use of airstrips for those particular purposes would be relatively infrequent, but relatively high intensity when it does occur. For example, if it's top dressing,
yeah,
it would be multiple flights over now on a single day and potentially nothing at times thereafter.
Yes. And that sort of leads us back to this issue of that you mentioned about being a certain amount of anxiety about not knowing how many flights per day to get a really ideal condition for the top dressing, then you might need to have a pulse of flights over a few days and then nothing. Okay, thank you.
Going back to one, another submitted before referred to informal airports used for training purposes and for multiple takeoffs and landings for the purpose of training on it, and they sought that training be exempt as such as aerial top dressing is. Do you have a view on that?
Without knowing how frequent those operations might occur, I find it pretty difficult to form an opinion on that, sir. In my view, whether it's a training flight or a commercial flight, it really makes little difference in terms of the actual effect on other people within the environment. And as such, I would find it pretty difficult to permit training flights, particularly to any unknown scale, nature, or intensity.
No, thank you.
Thank you. You've answered all of our questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll dream to 10 a.m. tomorrow.